Good morning, everyone. I want to start by commenting on that song by Matt Redman. Anytime I've heard it over the last 10 years, I start crying. And Pat, you might have noticed I teared up a little bit this morning when we heard that. Because the words of it, when the sun's shining down on me, when the world's all as it should be, that's my life today. But I'm going to tell you this morning about a time when it was more like the road marked with suffering and pain in the offering. And I never thought of this before, but just this morning as we sang it too, it closes with, "My heart will choose to say, Lord, blessed be your name." And I have a heart that spent 47 years in somebody else's body getting ready to come into my body. And that heart does say, "Blessed be your name." So we're just going to continue sharing time this morning is really what we're doing. And I'll tell you what happened to me. Back in 2007, I was very healthy. I was 44 years old. I ran. I lifted weights. I played basketball 2 to 3 times a week. And everything was good. The sun was shining down on me. The world was all as it should be. On October 5th, 2007, I walked out of the courthouse. And I was walking to my car, and I felt this horrible pain at the base of my throat. I didn't know what it was, and I tried to keep walking, and I realized it had to be something very bad because it was so painful. So I just turned around and I walked back into the courthouse and sat down the first chair I could find, and I started to pass out. And within minutes, literally, there were EMTs there, and they were helping me to try to stay awake and not pass out. And just working with me, and they brought a gurney up. EMTs came, put me on a gurney and brought me out. And I remember coming out of the courthouse door, and the ambulance was not out in the parking lot. It was at the base of the stairs of the courthouse. And I thought, this isn't good. So they put me in the ambulance, drove me to Jones Memorial Hospital in Wellsville. I knew we had gotten to Sile because I could feel the bumps going over the railroad tracks, and I started vomiting. And when you're strapped down on a gurney, that's not an easy thing to do. And I had to turn my head as best I could, and I vomited 5 times between Sile and arriving at Jones. So I got to Jones, and there was a new doctor. It was his first day there, and he said, "Hi, this is my first day in Wellsville." And not real assuring. And he didn't know what was wrong with me. And he said, "Oh, I think maybe you just have an ulcer and some other things." And Cece was there quickly, and Mason Sorensen and Joan Sorensen came and joined us. And it was very frustrating because once I got enough either Demerol or morphine, whichever it was that day, into me, I felt better. And I thought, I'm going to be fine. But they knew that I wasn't. And so they're praying with me, and the doctor really doesn't have any answers. And there was an EMT there, and he kept saying, "You have to get him out of here. You have to get him out of here, or he's not going to live." And I heard him say this several times, and I'm thinking, no, I'm okay. So finally, after about 3.5, almost 4 hours, the doctor took me in for a CAT scan and immediately saw that I had an aortic dissection. And they put me on a helicopter, and they flew me up to Strong Memorial Hospital. And I had 8 inches of my aorta cut out and a graft put in, and praise God, I lived. And I'm going to give you a little bit of anatomy lessons here today, too. So, Billy, if you can put a slide up there, I want to explain what an aortic dissection is. So that long artery is the aorta. It comes out of your heart, and it feeds the blood to the rest of your body. It goes down to your legs, feeds your legs, all your organs, and your head. And next slide. So there, again, is the aorta. That's what it looks like for most of you. Mine's a little bit different now. And the next slide. So you can see up there where it says dissection. This is what happened to me, is the aorta has 2 concentric rings, and the blood flows down the middle. Well, the inner ring was breaking, dissecting, and the blood was flowing between the linings instead of through the aorta, which means blood's not getting to my organs, blood's not getting to my legs, blood's not getting to my head. According to the statistics I read, 3 out of every 100,000 people will have an aortic dissection. Those who get into surgery within an hour have a 20% chance of survival. Those who don't get into surgery within an hour, it's extremely unlikely that you will live. And praise God, it was over 4 hours before I got into surgery, and yet miraculously I lived. So Cece came to the hospital with Joan Sorensen. They drove up to Strong. I was in surgery. I was in surgery, I think, for 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours, honey. And then the doctor came out and said, he's doing well, everything's fine, you can go home. And she went home, back to Angelica, and then got a call about 3 o'clock in the middle of the night, and the doctor said another artery in his chest broke, and he's going back into surgery. So I had surgery on a mammary artery, and they were able to repair that, but they had glued my chest shut after the first surgery, so they had to pry it back open, and not to be too graphic, but basically they take a claw and they pull your chest open, pull your ribs back to work on. So they had to do that again and then glue me back together. And I spent the next week in the hospital up at Strong, and the doctor who was the head of the cardiac surgery department at Strong Memorial Hospital said, gee, you know, we don't know why this happened to you. You're a healthy guy. It's very unusual. We don't know why this would happen. It's just a fluke, but you'll be all right. And I was glad to hear that. And so I went home. I was very weak, couldn't do much. And 1 month later, the doctor said, you know, it's time to start rehabbing, to get back in shape, get healthy again. So I want you to go and start walking. My son Anthony was playing basketball at Genesee Valley School at the time. So during his practice, I went over to the school and I walked on the indoor track. Well, I walked a half mile. And it took me 45 minutes. Pulling myself along the rail. And the embarrassing part was there were three women who were probably in their 80s, and they lapped me 3 times. So I didn't feel great about that. But when I finished, I sat down waiting for Anthony to finish basketball practice, and he finished, and I stood up, and when I stood up, boom, right down to the floor. I didn't know what happened. I thought I was hit with a basketball or something. I landed on the floor, and I got up and said, what happened? And they said, you just passed out. You just fell to the floor. So, again, because I really didn't think anything was wrong with me, I was like, well, I'm sure I'll be fine. I'm just going to go home. And the coach said, because you're at a school and you passed out, we have to call an ambulance. It's required. So I had to wait. The ambulance came. It was the same EMTs who had been there the month earlier, and particularly the one that I think really saved my life by telling the doctor I had to get out of there. And so my blood pressure, or my heart rate, was 110 when I was sitting and 120 when I was standing. And he said, Tom, I can't force you to go to the hospital, but based on everything I know, you really, really need to go. And I didn't want to. And I gave in. I went to the hospital. So I get in an ambulance again and go to Jones Memorial Hospital. There's a new doctor in the emergency room. That was a good thing. And I don't know what happened to the other one. So the doctor in the emergency room called the doctor who had operated on me. And again, this guy is the head of the cardiac surgery department at Strong Memorial Hospital, so he knows a thing or two. And so the surgeon said, well, he's probably just dehydrated. Just tell him to get some fluid, send him home, and tell him to call me tomorrow. And the doctor said, I'm not doing it. And I was like, well, you know, he's the surgeon. He knows. He says, I'm not doing it. You're staying in the hospital tonight. I wasn't happy about that. So I stayed in the hospital. He said, you can go home at noon tomorrow. Cece came to pick me up. In the meantime, they had taken me the next morning for a CAT scan, and the CAT scan showed that I had bulges or aneurysms in my aorta. Billy, if you can show the next slide. Oh, not that one yet. Sorry. I misspoke. We didn't know about the aneurysms at that point. Go to the next slide. What the CAT scan showed, so this was a month after I had the dissection, was that I had an enlarged heart. I had cardiomyopathy. And there's no literature that says cardiomyopathy is somehow related to an aortic dissection or the disease they later learned I had. But the doctor said, it's a good thing I kept you overnight because you have cardiomyopathy. Your heart is enlarged and it's weak. You're going to have to go back to the hospital in Rochester. So they put me on an ambulance, took me back up to Strong. I met with the doctor there and he said, I don't get it. You know, you're a healthy 44-year-old guy. And he said, probably because you are so healthy, that's why you made it through the last time. And I don't know why you'd have this now. It's just a fluke. But, you know, we'll keep you in the hospital for a week and we'll send you home and I think you'll be fine. And I was glad to hear that again. So after a week, I got out of the hospital. I went home. I had agreed the next day to represent somebody and defend her on a traffic ticket, a speeding ticket, in a court over in Cattaraugus County. And I didn't know this woman, but she was a friend of a friend. So they picked me up, and we're driving there, and she starts telling me how she has a heart condition, and she went to the Cleveland Clinic, and they were able to take care of her. I had never heard of the Cleveland Clinic, and I said, oh, you know, that's nice. I'm glad I'm going to be okay. And she said, oh, you should go to the Cleveland Clinic. Well, I didn't want to do that, but she kept encouraging me to do it, and I won the speeding ticket trial for her, got that dismissed. And so she kept encouraging me, and our mutual friend kept encouraging me to go out to Cleveland. So finally, I gave in, and I made an appointment, and I went to Cleveland. Well, praise God, it's a good thing that I did, because the doctors in Rochester, although they were great doctors, they had no explanation for what was going on with me. When I went to the Cleveland Clinic, which, by the way, for the past 23 years has been ranked the number one cardiac hospital in the world, they did some genetic testing, and they found that I have a disease called Loeys-Dietz syndrome, which at the time there had been less than five, well, as of 2010, there had been less than 500 people diagnosed with this, most of them children, because adults don't find out they have it. They find out they have it when they have an aortic dissection and die. So I talked with some of the doctors in Strong again, and none of them, there wasn't a doctor at Strong Hospital who had ever heard of Loeys-Dietz syndrome. And yet at Cleveland, the first day when I met with the doctor, she said, I know what's wrong with you. She said, I have to get it confirmed with genetic testing, but I know what's wrong with you. And she was right. So I have this Loeys-Dietz syndrome, and it's a connective tissue disorder that affects my joints and other things, but the worst thing it does, and it does it to everyone who has it, is that you get an aortic dissection. So then, the next slide, they did another CT scan, and they found instead of having an aorta that looked like that, my aorta now looked like the one on the right here. Had all these bulges in it. And the doctor said, you're going to have your entire aorta replaced. And the doctor who did the surgery, world-renowned doctor, does only one thing, and that's aortic surgeries. And he told me that an aortic replacement, which is called an elephant trunk procedure, you can see kind of the elephant trunk there, is the most complicated cardiac surgery that they do at the Cleveland Clinic. And he's a wonderful surgeon, doesn't have a great bedside manner, and he sat there and he told me, so here are the facts. When I do this surgery, there's a 5% chance that you will die. There's a much, much higher probability that you're going to end up paralyzed. And as a certainty, your vocal cords will be damaged and you'll forever have a hoarse, raspy voice. But that's a minor price to pay for saving your life. Okay. He also said, I can't do the surgery in one procedure because it takes so long. It takes about 20 hours total. So I'll do 10 hours and replace the arch, the ascending aorta, and then the arch. And then 3 months later, when you're healthy again, I'll replace the descending aorta. So on June 25th, 2008, I was in the hospital to have that first half of the aorta replaced. And at that point, I was in terrible pain. And Cece will remember, I would lie in bed, and because of those bulges, they're pressing on things in your torso, your organs, and your nerves. And I would just lie in bed screaming in pain and just crying out for God to take my life because I couldn't go out anymore. And I know that was horrible for her. But I was there for the surgery, and the night before the surgery, I remember thinking it was my Gethsemane moment. I was there thinking, Lord, if there's some other way, I don't want to do this. After what the doctor told me about the surgery, I don't want to do it. But if there isn't, then your will be done. Whatever happens, happens, as long as it's your will. So I had the surgery, and I remember vividly every time I'd go in for a surgery, and you go in and they start to anesthetize you and things go through your head. And in this instance, knowing that I was facing this tremendous procedure, I had a vision as I closed my eyes as the anesthesia took over. And in this vision, I saw a hill filled with thousands of people. And I knew all those thousands of people were praying for me and that I would make it through this surgery. And that was really comforting. So I had the surgery that went well. I was in the hospital for a week, maybe 2 weeks, I don't remember. I returned home, and I was so weak at that point that I couldn't walk. Cece would push me around in a wheelchair and to kind of get a little bit of exercise. She'd push me up and down the road in the wheelchair, push me around the yard and things like that just so I could get outside, because otherwise I really couldn't do anything. I lost a lot of weight. I got down to 145 pounds. I was 183 when this started. So I thought I was getting better. And then on July 20th, so this is about a month later, I was in bad shape. And on Sunday morning, Cece brought me down. We lived in Angelica. She brought me to Jones. And I said, listen, you know, this is becoming common, dropping me off at the hospital. Just drop me off. You go to church. Come back after church, and we'll see what's going on. So she went up to Full Gospel Church, and Mason said, I'm going back with you. We're going back to the hospital. So by the time they had come back, the doctor told me, you're not in good shape, and there's nothing I can do for you except try to keep you comfortable and keep you alive until we can fly you out to the Cleveland Clinic. But here's the problem. The weather reports say there's heavy cloud cover and storms between Wellsville and Cleveland, and there's no way we can fly you, and you're not healthy enough to be put in an ambulance. You wouldn't make it out to Cleveland. So I have to just keep you here and try to keep you comfortable. And it's going to be about 9 hours before we expect the cloud cover to clear up. So there's nothing I could do, and Cece and Mason prayed, and literally 15 minutes later, the doctor came in, and he looked very different, and he said, I can't explain this, but we just got a call. The clouds have dissipated. It's clear weather between here and Cleveland, and there's a jet on its way from Cleveland right now to pick you up. And Mason looked at the doctor, and he said, you know, you can explain it. And that was just, you know, I'd already had the miracles of surviving the aortic dissection and the miracle of the doctor overruling the head of the cardiac surgery department at Strong. And now I'm lying there, and 15 minutes later, the cloud cover dissipates. I don't know why God did that, but he did. So I went back out to Cleveland, spent another week there, came home again. Still was weak. I got to the point where I was so weak, I couldn't get out of bed, and I couldn't even lift my head off the pillow. Cece had to do everything for me. So August 13th, you know, when I couldn't do anything, couldn't lift my hands, couldn't lift my head. I went back to the hospital, and I don't remember why, but this time we went to Olean General instead of Jones. So we got to Olean General, and they did another scan there, and the doctor said, your liver is the size of a football, and there's something really wrong with you. So they put me on a helicopter again, another trip out to Cleveland. By the way, it's a lot faster getting to Cleveland in helicopters and jets than driving, so if you have that opportunity, you want to take it. So we got to the hospital August 13th, or I got to the hospital, and the doctor said, your cardiomyopathy is really bad, and you're going to have a heart transplant. I didn't even know what that was. Nobody had ever said anything about that. And then he and the other medical professionals explained how waiting for a heart transplant is something you do for months and months and months. And some people get hooked up to a machine, some have a vest, but you literally wait in the hospital for months until they can find a heart that is suitable size, blood type, and tissue type. So I said in my mind that I was going to be spending months in the Cleveland Clinic. Well, then the doctor came in to see me 2 weeks later, almost, on August 25th. And he came in and said, "Tom, we met on Friday, and your heart is just not going to make it." He said, "We put you on the transplant list. You're listed A1, put you at the top of the list, but your heart is so bad that you have 4 to 5 days left to live. And the chances of getting a heart in 4 to 5 days, it's just not practical. It's not going to happen. You need to start preparing." So, as I said, that was August 25th. And he said, "You have 4 to 5 days left to live." Well, August 25th happens to be our anniversary. Happy anniversary. August 25th happens to be Tyler's birthday. So I called home and I shared the news with Cece, wished her a happy birthday. Happy anniversary. Happy birthday to Tyler. I knew I wasn't going to be there, so I ordered her a... At that time, the Keurig coffee makers had just come out. You know, now everybody has one, but back then they had just come out. And one of the things I liked to do was get up in the morning and make coffee for my wife. I knew I wouldn't do it anymore. So I ordered her a Keurig and ordered a gift for Tyler and had them sent to the house. And then just started preparing. And I thought when I called Cece that she would break down and cry and, "Oh, you know, this is horrible and I'll miss you." And she didn't say that. No, instead, I have to play that out a little bit, okay? So instead, she said, "I'm going to start making phone calls, and we're going to get people to pray for you." And literally, there were thousands of people who prayed for me during that last week of August 2008. She had a page set up on the Cleveland Clinic website where people could send messages, kind of like a Facebook page sort of thing. But, you know, people would send encouragement and prayers. And I counted over 300 messages that I got that week from people saying that they were praying for me, that their whole church communities were praying for me, missionaries, people I never met, just literally thousands of people were praying for me. So August 27th, 2 days later, same doctor comes in and he says, "You won't believe this." He said, "We've got a heart and it's suitable and we're going to do a transplant. But here's the problem with it. It's positive for hepatitis B and hepatitis C." He said, "But Tom, you have no choice. You are not going to live. You have to take this heart. After we transplant it, we'll talk about what that means and how to treat that and how it'll change your life and all that, but you have to take this heart because you won't live to see another one." And I said, "Okay." So they flew the heart. I don't know where it came from, but they flew it to Cleveland. And when they got it to Cleveland, and we were praying about that, they tested it. There was no hepatitis. And they tested it again after they put it in my chest, and there was no hepatitis. So praise God for another miracle. So I underwent the heart transplant on August 27th, like I said, 2 days after I was told I had 4 to 5 days left to live. And after having spent literally weeks where I couldn't get out of bed, months where I couldn't get out of bed, 4 days after I had the heart transplant, they said, "If you want, you can get up and walk." And the hospital where I was at that point, the halls were a square, and it was 1/4 mile around the hall. So they said, "You know, if you want to try, that it would be 1/4 mile to walk that far." So I did that 8 times that day. I walked 2 miles. Yeah. Yeah, I kept walking after that too. I haven't really stopped. But the next step was, so they're going to discharge me from the hospital, and they said, you have to stay in the area because you have to come back to the hospital every day for tests and rehab. So the Cleveland Clinic has, they have a couple of hotels. One of them is across the street and it's called the Guest House. And the second floor of the Guest House is only for transplant patients. And they said, you can stay in the Guest House and you get a discounted rate because you're a transplant patient. And it'll be $55 per night. And that's a really good rate, but we really didn't have any money. And I was contacted by my dad's sister, whom I hadn't seen probably since I was about 6 years old, because my parents were divorced when I was just an infant, and I really haven't had much contact at all with my dad's side of the family. But my aunt called me, and she said, I'm going to pay for you to stay at the Cleveland Clinic, or at the Guest House. I'll pay the whole thing. So I got moved in there, and I stayed there for my month and went to the hospital every day, and the entire bill, over $3,000, was paid for by this relative that I really didn't even know. And it was one of several financial miracles. So I got to go back home, and here's a funny story I wasn't going to tell, but I get home, and Cece had a big sheet out front, welcome home, Tom. And the next day, she went to work, and I was out in the driveway, and some woman in a yellow Corvette, older woman, long hair, pulls up, and she says, are you Tom? And I said, yes. Well, where have you been? Well, I was in the hospital. I had a heart transplant. Oh, I saw the sign. I thought maybe you were deployed overseas in the Army or something. I'm like, no, sorry, I had a heart transplant. Okay, and she got back in her car and left. I never saw the woman again. So I still remember, I still have to have the bottom of my aorta replaced, right? Well, now they found that I had a blockage up in my thoracic and carotid arteries, which would be the artery coming out to my shoulder and the one going up to my head. And said, before we can do that other, the end of the elephant trunk procedure, we need to clear this up. But this is a lesser surgery. You'll be in the hospital about 3 days. And that was great. So I went back to Cleveland. I had the surgery. 3 days later, I got out. And it had been a tradition of ours for some years. Cece and I would go down to Delaware at Thanksgiving time. We have friends who live down there. And we'd go down to our Christmas shopping in tax-free Delaware. And it's 8.5% here, Dwight, you know. So we would do that, and Cece and I would be goofy, and we'd put on Santa hats and go and sing carols and stuff, and because a lot of people are real tense and uptight when they're shopping on Black Friday, and we'd see people getting fights, and we kind of break them up and try to just cheer people up. And I got to do that. You know, I had surgery on November 15th. And I got out of the hospital and was well enough that I could still go and do my Black Friday shopping and have my fun at 4 a.m. On Thanksgiving morning or the day after Thanksgiving. So then I had to go back and have the rest of the aorta replaced. And I was told, you know, this will be the last surgery. This will be the end. And I put it in my mind at that point that 2008 would be the end of this. So by the time I got to the end of 2008, I was going to be healthy again. All of this stuff would be behind me, and I'd just move on with my life. So I was so convinced of that, and the doctor did tell me, you'll be out of the hospital before Christmas. I made hotel reservations in Toronto, and I bought tickets to Disney on Ice so that we could go there for New Year's Day and see Disney on Ice. Well, I went back into the hospital for the second stage of the elephant trunk procedure. And because my chest had been cracked open 4 times and I had this transplanted heart now, the doctor said, I'm not going to go through your chest again. I'm going to go through your side. So, Billy, if you could show the next slide. Okay. Well, I'll tell you about it then. So he said, instead of going through your chest, we'll go through your side. There's a small incision and we go up through the ribs and do the surgery. That sounds great. So it turns out the aorta and those bulges were far worse than they even thought at that point. And so he had to cut through five ribs, take one rib out completely. I have a hole right here where I have a rib missing. And it didn't turn into Eve or anything like that. It just came out, it was gone. And I woke up the next morning and I had 75 staples running from here up around my chest and up to my neck, holding me together. It looked like I had a chainsaw blade in me or had been bitten in half by a shark or something like that. And that was really hard for me. But praise God, the other things that the doctor said, you know, the 5% chance of death obviously didn't occur. I'm not paralyzed, and my voice is the same voice I've always had, like it or not. So I got through that, and even with this huge mess in my body now, I thought, he told me I'd be home by Christmas, so I will be. And that didn't happen. I started getting worse, and so I was still there on Christmas Day, and a nurse's aide went to lift me up out of my bed. I was getting weak, and I told her, please don't pull, just let me lift myself up. And she didn't. She pulled, and something happened. And I couldn't breathe anymore. So they put me on oxygen and took me back to cardiac intensive care. And then the doctor told me that I would have to stay on oxygen. And this doctor who had done the surgery, who's this tremendous world surgeon, said, I'm not opening him up again. We've done too much. It was far more than I ever anticipated, and I'm not going to open him up again. And so the other transplant cardiologist came to see me and said, he doesn't want to do anything, and you'll live, but you're going to be using an oxygen tank for the rest of your life. And she said, I won't let that happen to you. I'll find someone. So she went out, and she found another doctor who was willing to come in and do a surgery on me. And that was another miracle. So they had to open up my side again. Okay. So, you know, I thought it would be like that, but it was so much more than that. It just went on, like I said, from down here all the way up to my back. And they had to take the ribs out because it was just, the aorta was too big. And to get to it, they had to do that. And the next slide. You can see the graft up there. So that was the first thing I had done, but then eventually, I think the next slide shows, this is what they put inside of me. I've got a whole bunch of this stuff inside of me now. And the next one. No, go back. So the whole aorta now and all the arteries in here that go like to my stomach, my lungs, my liver, all that, they're all that artificial Dacron stuff at this point. So back to being on oxygen and in cardiac intensive care. And I started realizing I'm not going home before New Year's Eve. I'm not going to Toronto. And I became very, very depressed. And I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want to hear about anybody praying for me. People would call my room and I'd pick up the phone and hang up. I wouldn't listen to it. And Bill Baker, some of you know Bill, he's been a friend of mine for a long time. He had come earlier to pick me up from Cleveland one time, and when he got there, the doctor said, it was on a Friday, and the doctor said, you're not going to be able to leave. You're going to have to stay till Monday. And Bill spent the weekend with me to take me home on Monday. This time, he said, I'm coming to see you. And I said, no, I don't want to see anybody. And I hung up on him. And he showed up anyway, and he came in my room, and he said, look, you don't have to talk to me. I don't care. I'm sitting here. You can do whatever you want. Ignore me. That's fine. But I'm sitting here. And he did. And after about maybe 4 hours, I finally started talking to him. But I was that depressed. I didn't want to hear about God. I didn't want to hear talk to anybody. I just couldn't take it anymore. And up to that point, I had always kept very positive about everything. You know, God's working in my life, and he's taking care of me, and I'm getting through my surgeries and all this. And now, just this depression overwhelmed me. And I'm the kind of person who always thought, you have depression, get over it. And I learned that is really not the case. And I thank God that that I did go through that, because now I understand. And I know a lot of people do suffer from depression. And it lasted for months. It was really, really hard. But anyway, they took me back in on January 5th, the day before my birthday, and they opened up my side again, and they drained 2 pints of blood off of my lung and scraped 3 blood clots off of the lining of the left lung so that I could breathe again. And I finally was released from the hospital on January 12th, 2009, and at that point I had an infection, and I had to be on IV, a home IV. I had to hook up and treat myself with IV antibiotics every day for 30 days. And it was really, really hard. And I remember during that time, there was something going on in Florida with healing. And I don't remember the ministry, but I would watch that and just sit there and pray, God, just heal me, just heal me, just take it all away. I don't want any more of this. And but he got me through all of it, even the depression. And I did end up going back into the hospital twice in 2009 with infections and spending another couple of weeks in the hospital. And I've since had both of my hips replaced, and that's also related to this disease I have, Loeys-Dietz syndrome. But otherwise, I'm healthy again. And just I just want to tell you again about the financial miracles. I already shared the $3,000 that this aunt paid for me. When I did our taxes in 2008, after working very little during that year, we had received an awful lot of gifts from people at the courthouse, people we knew. And when I added that in to what my actual earned income was and Cece's income, we were $500 less than 2007. And that was just an incredible financial miracle. And here's maybe the biggest financial miracle. That jet that I got to take out to Cleveland that time, the cost was $34,000. And we had great insurance. And I calculated the medical bills at one point. It was over $1,400,000. And then I stopped at that point. But out of that $1,400,000, we had paid less than $500. And so on this flight, the insurance paid $10,000 and refused to pay any more. And I checked into it, and basically it was going to be our responsibility. And I kept getting these billing notices, and I'd go to my office, and there's messages on the answering machine, you know, when are you going to pay us? When are you going to pay us? And so finally one day, I walked over to the office. My office was next door to my house, and I heard one of those messages, and I called back. I was really irate, and I called back. Fortunately, I didn't get the person who called. I got an answering machine, and I said, look, I've had it. Don't you ever send me another bill. Don't you ever call this office again. I don't care what you do about that bill. You can write it off. You can sue me and try to collect it, because I don't know if I'm ever going back to work. I don't know how many more surgeries I'm going to have. I don't care what you do. Just do not contact me again about that bill. So then I went to get the mail back to the house. I looked in the mail. There was a check from Blue Cross for $24,000. I went back and I called. The woman said, oh, Mr. Fugo, I got your message. Don't worry. You won't be hearing from me anymore. And I said, well, I have a different message for you. I just got a check from Blue Cross for $24,000. She said, I don't believe that. She said, I've spoken to 13 different people at Blue Cross, and every one of them told me we are not paying that additional $24,000. I said, that may be, but I'm holding the check right now, and I'm going to mail it to you. So praise God for that. So honestly, that was the very, very short version of everything I went through during that 15 months. And the story is about how merciful and gracious God was to me through the whole thing. There were a lot of other things that happened, and people could say coincidences. You know, just what I shared with you, you don't get that many coincidences in your life. You really don't, you know? But like that $24,000 check, and not only it God in his mercy paid that bill, but he taught me another lesson, right? Shut your mouth, you know? Have a little faith, right? So it was a tremendous time and very difficult. I did get over the depression after a few months. And so by 2010, I had started, I couldn't run anymore because the pounding just hurt my side too much, and I still have pain from that. But I decided to start riding a bicycle. And in 2010, and so if you do have a slide, there is a slide there for that. In 2010, I took part in the U.S. Transplant Games out in Wisconsin. And that's a picture from the Transplant Games. And I want to show you, do you see around my neck there, that gold medal? Now, before you clap. So I was terrible. I came in next to last in my race. So they have closing ceremonies where you're all in this big stadium and, you know, it's a big, huge thing. So I went to a dollar store and I found a medal that said winner, and I bought it. I wore it to the closing ceremony. So the last slide, for a long time I tried to figure out, why did this happen to me? And, you know, why did I go through so much pain and suffering? Was God chastising me, punishing me for sins in my life? Why did I get healed of so many things? Was God blessing me, though I didn't deserve it? I really didn't know, and I thought about it so many times, and I read my Bible trying to find it. And ultimately, this is what Jesus taught me. This happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. And that's what really counts. So I hope through this you did see that the works of God were displayed through what he did in my life. And that when you go through things, both the road marked with suffering and when the world's all that it should be, I hope that you see that God is doing that so that he can be shown in your life as well. So thank you for letting me share that. And what I'd like to do is have the worship team come back. And I know a lot of you are going through pain and suffering. And maybe, you know, there's pain in the offering and you would like prayer. And I just wanted anybody who wants to pray while they're playing, come forward. And CC and I and the elders will pray with you. Because God does do miracles. And if you could listen to me for the last 45 minutes and not think that God does miracles, you might as well leave right now, because there's not much hope. So thank you very much.